Welcome to Is This Real Life? A Bravo podcast that relates our favorite shows to our own lives and the world around us. I'm your host, Mandy Slutsker. Let's get to it. Hi, real lifers. I hope you all had a lovely week. For those of you who follow me on social media, you've probably seen that myself and some of the other podcasters in the DC, Maryland area got together and went to Rocklands Farm and Winery, which is a winery in Poolsville, Maryland, where the Real Housewives of Potomac season 5 filmed during the epic fight between Monique and Candace. And they were so lovely and so kind to us there. They opened up the indoor space for us to look around because it wasn't open, and they turned the lights on and they put the table in the middle, and we did some hilarious recreation of the epic fight where Taria was Monique, RT from the Reality Is podcast was Candace, and I was Ashley, who came back from the bathroom. It was so much fun. And it made me so excited for this upcoming season of The Real Housewives of Potomac. As you all know, it is my favorite Housewives franchise, and I just am counting down the days. And I'm so excited that Bravo is doing a launch party, or a premiere party, I should say, in Washington, D.C. at the Southwest Waterfront, the Wharf. But I'm going to actually be home in Minnesota during then, so I won't be there. But for those of you who live in the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area, you should definitely go check it out. Well, this week we only had one episode of Housewives. It was The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, but there was certainly a lot to discuss. So my guest is Zach Mellon from the Mummy Dearest podcast. I always call it Mommy Dearest, but it's Mummy Dearest because it started as a podcast about the movie The Mummy. And it actually is a podcast about movies that we love from the 1990s and 2000s. So we chat all things Housewives, all things 90s, a little bit of Britney Spears, and so forth. But I told you all that how much I loved Family Karma. So I'm going to be adding Family Karma in to these podcasts. Even if my guests don't watch, I'm going to give little recaps and thoughts on it. So on this week's Family Karma, I just absolutely fell in love with Amrith and Nicholas's, you know, family. It's Amrith's family, but to see how warm they are to Amrith and Nicholas is just so lovely. And they make plans to tell his grandmother, his nanny, that he's gay, because that's sort of what's been holding him back for proposing to Nicholas and having a wedding, because he's saying it would be the first gay wedding in that kind of Indian community in the area where they live in Miami. And we also get to meet Monica's boyfriend, Rish's family, and they all seem very lovely. And you kind of get a little more backstory on Monica and why she wants to create this like lovely and loving home, because her parents, since their divorce, haven't been able to be in the same room as each other. And I was always wondering while I was watching season one, are we ever going to see from Monica's mom? And we finally got to meet Monica's mom, Anita. And it's clear that there's still so much tension between her and Monica's dad. They really just can't stand each other is what it sounds like. And they can't be at the same place and the same time. And Monica, you know, opens up to her mom about how she's worried, like, if I get married, can you guys even be there together? You know, what if I have a kid? And she's saying that even if you couldn't come together for me, which is just breaks my heart, I hope that you could come together for my child, a future child. And her mom definitely agrees. It's so tough when, you know, parents aren't able to come together to at least, you know, have a united front with their child. We also get to see Brian chat with his mom. I absolutely love her. And he talks about how his girlfriend, also named Monica, but a different Monica, Monica Shaw, she's a doctor and she comes from a family of doctors. And even though he has this really great career in IT, he feels like maybe they're judging him or they don't think he's good enough for her because he's not a doctor. And I thought that was a really interesting thing to hear and to watch and to see as their relationship plays out. And of course, there was this Halloween party slash housewarming for Amrit and Nicholas that moved in together. You know, one of the things that I actually am enjoying about this season is no one ever discusses COVID. It's like, I know they live in Florida, but my God, you know, and they're able to do so many things outside and to film outside, which, you know, this party was outdoors. So, you know, but it was just fascinating to see them kind of all come together for a party. So Vishal and Dylan make up. Dylan had been saying some pretty nasty things about Vishal, saying that he's gay and he's not gay. Dylan is gay, but I don't know. The whole thing was weird and Vishal threatened violence against Dylan, but they made up and are able to move forward. But it is really fascinating watching Anisha and Monica try and get on the same page because they've sort of been feuding for the last two seasons. And on the podcast last week, I had Artsy and Noor, and they really broke down why Anisha is so annoyed with Monica because they believe Monica is putting on a front, trying to act really perfect and kind of not sharing her full life with the show. And they're on a reality show, you know, and it's also kind of making Anisha and the other women who maybe don't lead that so-called perfect life, it makes them look worse. And so I definitely see where they are coming from. So I absolutely love Family Karma, guys. If you haven't watched it, you know, the first season is only 8 episodes, no reunion. It's totally easy to watch. And there have been 4 episodes of season 2 so far. And it's just, it's such a joy. It has absolutely everything you would want out of a Bravo show. And probably the most laughter on any show I've seen in the last few months, for sure, on Bravo. So I am loving it. If you're not tired of my voice, you can listen to me on Pink Shade this week. I was on Pink Shade with Mary Payne, and we chat Real Housewives of Beverly Hills and a lot about Britney Spears. And then this coming week, I am going to be on Taria's podcast, What Else Is Going On, that comes out on Tuesday. So you should definitely check it out. And on that one, we really talk about a lot of life things and not just housewives. So if you want to know more about, I don't know, me and my thinking on things and Taria's thinking and our friendship, I think you guys should give it a listen. As always, if you like the podcast, go on iTunes and give it a 5-star review. It really helps the podcast and it helps me get new and exciting guests. And you can always follow me on social media at Mandy Slutsker. I posted some pretty funny videos of our time at the Rocklands Winery, so you should definitely check those out. And without further ado, here is my chat with Zach Mellon from Mummy Dearest. Hi, everyone. I am here with Zach Mellon, who is co-host of the Mommy Dearest podcast. Or is it Mummy Dearest? Yeah. Tell me, how are you doing today?
I'm so good. How are you? Good. I had a really relaxing day.
Yeah. What'd you do?
Not a whole lot. I got a haircut. I went shopping for some birthday parties I have to go to for children in the near future. And that's about it. And I went for a long walk.
Oh, that sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about Mummy Dearest.
Sure. So Sloan and I started Mummy Dearest like kind of like on a whim. We had kind of started DMing back and forth over pandemic. Like so many weird things happened during that time. And we just kind of like clicked out of like nowhere. Like she's from Miami and I'm from Providence, Rhode Island. We've never met each other, and we just were laughing at each other through DM. And we found out that we both really loved the movie The Mummy from 1999, like this weird obsession with it. So she has a lot more followers than I do. So she asked her followers if they would listen to a podcast about The Mummy. And there was like this huge like uprising of like mummy fans. So We started with just doing, we were just going to do two episodes about the first two Mummy movies, and it got such like positive feedback that we've just been doing them every week ever since. And it's just every week it's a new movie from the 90s or 2000s. And the movie is why we record, but we talk about so much more than, I mean, we get together for the movie and depending on the movie, we talk about it a lot or we talk about it a little. A lot of these movies we haven't seen like since they came out or since we were kids. So we're not sure how we're going to feel about them now.
Right. I've been wondering that. Like, I'm wondering how Angels in the Outfield feels to watch as an adult.
Now, I honestly, that movie has not come up in my mind for a long time. And now I'm nervous that I wouldn't love it. That movie was like a lot to me. I like loved that movie.
Me too.
Yeah. No, it's this weird, like, we did an episode about Blast from the Past with Alicia Silverstone and Brendan Fraser. And we realized that we loved it so much more than we thought we were going to. It was like the cutest movie. But then there's movies like, Bedazzled. So like everyone loves Brendan Fraser, like on this podcast, like our listeners like love Brendan Fraser. So we try to get one in every couple episodes. And Bedazzled like was not, it like fell super flat and we actually didn't even release that episode. So sometimes it doesn't go well, but that's the whole part of the making process.
Because most of the movies that I watched in the 90s and maybe early 2000s, so this is mainly 90s, I continue to watch because they're favorites. Like First Wives Club, I watch like at least once a year. Best in Show, you know, there's just certain movies that I love to keep watching, but I'm wondering about the ones that I haven't seen in a long time.
Yeah, and that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to remember those movies that you loved and kind of forgot about. So that's what we're trying to bring back. But, you know, like every now and then we'll do a big one. Like we just did Jurassic Park and people liked that a lot. So, but like Batman and Robin, we did that and that was a really good episode. Or Showgirls. Like we just do these like weird, quirky.
Showgirls has like a cult following for sure.
I didn't realize that. A lot of these movies that. Do,
but that one especially.
Yeah, I didn't realize that it had such a following until we released it. And it was big. It was like, I was like, no, no one's going to listen to this episode. And she's like, no, trust me.
Oh, people love it. Just like how First Wives Club has, you know, and that's a movie that I saw in theaters. I think it was one of the PG-13 movies I saw in theaters. And my mom was like, you're not going to relate. It's like middle-aged women whose husbands leave them. And I loved it. I loved everything about it.
It's heartwarming. And I think I had obviously seen that movie, but I went through this thing during the lockdown where I was watching all of these nostalgic 90s like comedies because I couldn't get into anything too serious. I was like so emotional during lockdown. So I was like Father of the Bride I watched, which is honestly too emotional, but
get that up down.
So, yeah, no, it's so good. Mother and Doctor Pregnant Together.
Baby Together.
Yeah, no, those so movies good. Are amazing. Yeah. Those movies are great. And I was watching, like, I watched First Wives Club and like I had never seen Practical Magic.
I haven't seen
that. Oh yeah, you actually should watch it if you like 90s movies. It's got like the music and the vibe and the whole thing.
I'm trying to think of movies I watched as a kid, like if I would enjoy them now, like Beethoven and Beethoven Second.
The Great Panda Adventure. Did you ever watch that? Oh my God, I love that movie.
There's or so like many.
The Three Ninjas.
I don't think I saw those. Did you watch?
Okay, never mind. That might be too niche.
Although I told you about my favorite 90s movie in DM, which is Wag the Dog.
You didn't mention that. Did you mention that?
I think so. It's my absolute favorite movie, but not many people have seen it, and it's definitely niche. And I don't even know if there's a cult following, but
I'm sure there is.
Like in high school, I gave a speech about it. Like I was in a speech class, and we had to come up with something we were really passionate about. And I was really passionate about Wag the Dog. It's just so fascinating. And
I don't think I've seen it.
So it's got Robert De Niro and Dustin Hoffman, and they, like, when I was like reading about it, it sounds like they got so into their characters that they didn't necessarily always follow a script. They were kind of ad-libbing a lot of the time, which I find just incredible. Yeah. But it's just about a president who you never see, who has an inappropriate relationship with a 16-year-old girl, and it's 10 days before the election, and he's up for re-election. And so his advisors, which is Robert De Niro and Heche, hire Dustin Hoffman, who is a Hollywood director, to create a fake war to distract the American public.
That is not at all what I thought that movie was about.
It is fascinating.
Is it funny?
Yes, it is the funniest thing, but it is also so dark in a way, because it gets like people rallied to be American. And this is all before 9/11 and everything.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh no, now we need to find a hero. Like each time something goes wrong, they're like, oh, we need to find a hero. Oh, like a shoe. Like, let's find people whose last names are Schumacher, Schumann, you know, all this stuff. And then there's a guy left behind in enemy lines and they can't come up with a war with Albania because they say no one knows where Albania is. No Americans know anything about Albania.
That's true.
But if they know that we're at war with them, they have these t-shirts that say like, fuck Albania. And like,
oh my gosh. I had red, white, no and blue.
Yeah. Idea. And they make jokes throughout the movie about other things that had been faked that like were obviously real.
Yeah. Right.
But you know, what do we know? Like,
it's
stupid. We shot that film in like Falls Church, Virginia, you know, use like 3/8 scale of a building, you know. And it's then there's like, Will, did you really? And he's like, what do I know? Like, it's
really just a mockery of our country. I mean, like, because I was just like saying to a friend, like, didn't like a bunch of people just die from like a building collapsing, like in Florida?
Yeah, it's
and bad. All we're talking about is Britney Spears.
I know. I think part of the issue with the Florida building is that we don't have information right away. And if we don't have it right away, people don't absorb it. So there are potentially 100 people dead. And by the time this comes out, I just saw that like
90 people are missing.
Yeah. Like 99 are unaccounted for. Ugh. So, but because they don't have the remains, they don't know for sure. And it's not this big headline. And I don't know what it needs to be to like make a big headline. No. I don't know. It's
just who we are. It's like
who
really
we are as a country.
Yeah.
And
or a generation.
We ignored, I mean, when there were, you know, 3,000-4,000 people dying every day from COVID, you know, there were a lot of people that just wanted to bury their heads in the sand. It's just too much to imagine. Yeah.
It's true. Yeah. We'll just do anything that the media tells us to.
Yeah, we're definitely slaves to the media culture.
We are.
But we're also, as pop culture fans, so fascinated by it. And I think
I know.
Part of the Britney Spears story is like she, everything that was going on with her was during sort of the height of pop culture. And a lot of people think pop culture is dead now. Instagram killed it.
It is. But, it did.
But what, I mean, what are your thoughts on everything that happened with Britney Spears?
Oh my God.
Week?
It's wild. I mean, obviously everything that she's saying, we assumed, and everything from that documentary, we knew. It's just that to see it all condensed into that like hour and a half show was like throwing us into a boiling pot almost. So we experienced all of what happened, but it was so spaced out. And then to see it all in that one film, and then for this to happen, I mean, my friends were like, oh my God, I can't wait to hear her speak. I can't wait to hear her speak. And I kept saying, why? She's just going to say she's fine. She's just going to say she's happy, even though she's not. And that's it. So the fact that she actually said what's actually going on is incredible. I mean, I hope that something happens to her. I feel so sad for her.
I know.
I mean, it's like a movie. It's like a horrible nightmare movie where you feel like you're not crazy and you're locked in a cell and it's gross and wild. And I don't know really what the trial, I know that the trial was to get her or to revisit her conservatorship. And I hope that they can look at her parents and her father and figure it out. I don't know. I mean,
someone has to file to end it.
That's what I mean. And
so crazy is, and we're going to get into it when we talk about Erica Jane, but like the legal system in this country is so stacked in favor of certain people and against mm-hmm. others. Yeah. And it is just wild once you get in a certain situation legally, how hard it is to get out. You know, people who get into the prison system or are on probation, how long it takes to get out of that.
I know.
You get pulled in, and then every it's little so thing, you know,
yeah.
you miss a hearing, then, you know, you violated your probation. It's, you know, it's constantly being piled on, and we make it so hard for people to live independently and healthy.
I know.
Who get and pulled into this.
And I'm like seeing her say that she wants to like be able to be picked up by her boyfriend and go places and do things. And then, but then I'm thinking it's like, she's just going to be mobbed by the paparazzi. Like, it's just so sad. Like, even if she does get out of this conservatorship and she wants to go shopping and to the movies and whatever, it's, she's just going to be mobbed once again by the paparazzi.
There have to be ways though, to get around it. I mean, there's so many A-list celebrities that everyone's interested in, but people have somehow dropped on following their every move. I think so much of the paparazzi is like people wanting to be followed. Not yeah. everyone, but like,
I know,
oh,
yeah.
catch me here, catch me there, take my photo.
Bronwyn Lindenberg. Lindenberg.
You know, and so for her, I feel like all she has to do is talk to some of her other famous friends about how she even knew, she says, my family is setting me up for these paparazzi photos.
I know.
Like,
yeah,
like the paparazzi doesn't know when she's going to therapy. Her dad or someone on this team is calling the paparazzi and saying she is therapy in Westlake. Catch her. She's not wearing makeup. She's crying. It'll be a perfect photo. You know,
so sad.
I mean, she said it in the testimony. So it also is just made me rethink, because as someone who consumed pop culture during the 2000s, how much of these photos were staged, who's making money off of these things? Because it's certainly not the women, you know, who've been victimized. And then to hear her say that when she heard Paris Hilton's story, that she didn't initially believe it. You know, and she's someone who knows Paris Hilton.
Yeah.
For real.
I know. What did you think about? Like, did you...
I think she was using it, because they talked about it. I didn't see all of Watch What Happens Live. I just saw a few clips. And Andy brought this up to Kathy Nikki. He said, you know, part... And I don't know if it was the after show or the full show, but he said part of what made her hesitant to come out is when she heard Paris's story, her initial reaction is, oh, that doesn't sound true. And so it wasn't that she didn't believe Paris. It was that was her initial reaction. And if that was her initial reaction, how could anyone believe her story? Because hers was even more wild, you know, in a way.
Yeah.
And so just how...
Wow, that was spun so poorly by the media.
I think that's what she was getting at. I think she was speaking so fast. It was hard. So I actually read, I think Variety published the actual transcript of what she said, and reading the actual words on the paper, I took it as she was giving an example of why she didn't think she would believe, because she's someone who didn't believe other people also.
Okay.
Because it's so easy not to believe these things.
Yeah. Okay. That makes more sense. Oh my God. I feel so bad for her. I know. This is just a taste of like what I was like, someone who refreshed Paris Hilton, like, every 10 minutes, like in 2006.
Oh, I didn't like him because he always had the drawings of like cum coming out of people's mouths. It's gross.
No, yeah, like he was a
and I was like,
absolute monster.
But I was like, that's disgusting.
It is.
Why would you do this?
I don't know why we thought. It was because no one was doing it like him. So like we were getting like minute by minute updates of these celebrities.
Right.
But it was gross.
I mean, it was interesting, but I felt like he was meaner to the women.
100%, because he wanted to have sex with the men.
That and was like, this is just weird. I don't know, something's off here.
That's like really good for you to note. I mean, the fact that you noticed it back then was...
I noticed that, but I didn't necessarily notice, oh, wow, Britney's in postpartum and she's being completely mobbed. And she, you know, you don't think of that. Or Jessica Simpson. I didn't really think of much of Jessica Simpson. I didn't think about her much. I liked her music, but I didn't follow everything going on in her life. I knew that she gained a lot of weight and then lost a lot of weight and then gained a lot of weight. I don't know why, but that's probably because anytime you go to a grocery store, that was what was on the front page of the magazines. So without even reading them, that's what you find out.
No, and that's like, you just made a good point. Like, so the thing is when we were watching all of this happen, we were just watching them break down in restaurants, like that video of Brittany in the restaurant crying with her son that she had walked into and asked for help, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But revisiting that as a grown up, you're right. Now seeing, like, as someone who has been in weekly deep therapy for over a year, or like been through, you know, things, you now know what she's actually going through. She's not just crying because she's crazy. She's crazy, Brittany.
Or addicted to drugs.
Yeah, she's a drug addict, so she's crying. It's like, now we know. To watch that documentary again as an adult was... And I was an adult back then, too. I just was an idiot.
I was young, and I don't know if I was paying that much attention.
That's what I mean. I was like 20.
Yeah.
So it was like,
I just don't think I was paying attention. And yeah, you believe what people tell you, and okay, I guess she shaved her head. Oh, you know.
How crazy.
That's wild. But
meanwhile, skip to 20, like 15 years later, and I'm shaving my head during the pandemic.
I'm definitely looking back and trying to question, you know, what do I really think of Lindsay Lohan or Amanda Bynes or any of these other people that we've been told are crazy and erratic and have problems, you know?
They're not as... I know. You're just fed these things about these people, and now you're grown up and you've been through stuff and you feel bad for them instead of judging them, and it's...
Meanwhile, there are people who've done pretty awful things, and men who've gotten away with it. I mean, I was too young when River Phoenix overdosed.
Ugh.
I didn't know who he was. I only found out who he was.
I didn't either,
like, much later when, you know, his brother won an Academy Award and I was like, oh, there was a brother before him and all that stuff. But Johnny Depp was very good friends with him and was there and was in the bathroom with him before the OD.
You just gave me goosebumps.
And everyone knows this, right? Everyone knows this. This was at Johnny Depp at the Viper Room. And who knows if Johnny supplied the drugs or who supplied the drugs, but he was doing heroin with River when River OD'd. And then who knows what happened after that. And then now we have evidence that he has been physically abusive with Amber Heard. No one wants to believe it. They believe it's her fault, all of that stuff. But people come to his defense, and like, he's been on drugs for all these years. He spent, you know, tens of thousands of dollars on wine a month. He's gone through his $1 million fortune. Like, something is wrong with that man, and no one is criticizing 100%.
Him. No, it's gross. It's very gross.
Yeah.
It's a very gross backward system. And it's like, I know. It's like, I know. That's so sad.
It's crazy to do sort of a post-mortem on
it is.
How you look at things. And I'm wondering if there are, before we get into Housewives, anyone on Bravo that you think was unfairly shown in a certain unfair light that if we were to rewatch, we would see it differently?
That's a really good question. I'm trying to think. I don't know. I don't ever feel like super bad for people who like don't look good. Because I don't know. I can't think of anyone off the top of my head, I guess.
I think the only thing I would think of is a little bit of Taylor Armstrong.
Oh, yeah.
They were like, well, we don't know what to believe. She says her husband beats her up and then she shows up with him at a party. It's like,
yeah.
Oh my goodness, this wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, it's easy to make someone look bad when they're going through like the worst time of their lives, right? So I guess, yeah, I think that obviously the Bravo producers have to do their job, and I'm sure they don't sleep at night sometimes. Because, yeah, their job is like to make this show and show us this interesting drama that we want to see, but sometimes it's like at the cost of these women having horrible mental breakdowns and Sometimes it can get a little gross. I think it's looking better lately, but
yeah. I feel like the difference with Bravo, though, is that it's showing these women, and hopefully it's showing them what would be happening even if there weren't cameras around.
Yeah.
I mean, this is what was going on with Taylor before she ended up on the show. He was abusive with her before that. The show was able to catch some of it.
And those are the heydays of a Housewives, right? So those like first two or three seasons are like the best moments that we get in Housewives because they're like real. They don't know how they should dress or how they should do their hair. They just do what they've always done, right? And then obviously as it gets going, they get some work done. They get their hair done. They change their stylists and there's glam before every dinner.
Fan reactions.
Yeah. So, and you know, when these all started, there really wasn't an Instagram or anything like that. Or Facebook was for college kids. So it was very like, they weren't getting like that immediate reaction to what they look like or how they act. And so there was a lot of realness. Like my favorite seasons, I think of like any Housewives franchise, are the first two seasons of New Jersey.
Which I actually haven't seen.
Are you kidding?
I know. New Jersey was the last franchise I got into.
Really?
Yeah. Something about like what I thought of them was particularly Teresa, like, and just like,
I don't know.
Just like it felt dirty and like it the is. Mob and they were screaming at each other. And there wasn't anything when I first started watching Housewives. It was about like these women live in these beautiful houses and they have pools and it's sunny all the time. And that the aspirational living aspect, there was nothing to me that was aspirational about living in New Jersey and being married to those men. So I just didn't watch. And
I don't
now
blame you.
I want to go back.
Yeah, I don't blame you. It was because like the first, so it was OC and the New York, and they were both really riveting and funny. And we got like really good stories from these women. New York particularly, because, you know, seeing like those women, like those socialites in New York City, we don't get a lot of that. We get it in movies and stuff, but this was really seeing the real women. But then in New Jersey, it was like women that you know, or I know. So in Rhode Island, there's a huge Italian population. It's Jersey. And I like know those types of men and women. And there was like this weird like mob tie-in, and there was a lot going on behind the scenes, which was the first time that we kind of got that, like in a Housewives where we were like, what are they talking about? That didn't happen on camera. Which like totally riveted me. So
That was big for me. I need to go back and watch. So speaking of things that didn't happen on camera, so this week, Bronwyn gave an interview to Kate Casey where she talked about being, you know, kicked off the show. And one of the things that came up was the situation where it was alleged that she offered Shannon's daughter cocaine or the name of a dealer or something like that. I can't remember the whole thing. Yeah. And that obviously happened off camera, but yet it was brought up at the reunion. And she's alleging now that it didn't actually happen that way. And that she was at a point in her recovery where she was accepting responsibility for everything, including things that she didn't remember that didn't happen or whatever, what have you. Did you follow any of this or what are your thoughts?
So the funny thing is that I didn't watch any of that season. I watched the first episode of that season and I was like, I cannot get into this because I couldn't watch anything about COVID at that time. Mm-hmm. And I was like, the cast wasn't really grabbing me or anything like that. So I didn't watch it. But then when the reunion came out, I watched all three episodes of the reunion and I found it great. I thought the reunion was awesome and I didn't really need to watch the season to follow the reunion, I guess. So I did watch all of that go down and, you know, I don't doubt that she maybe said an off color joke and said, you know, if you want the good stuff, let me know. Maybe not being serious or something, if she's like drunk or something, I wouldn't be shocked if she made that off color joke.
Yeah, that's what she sort of alleged happened, that it was a joke and it wasn't serious and all that, and that Shannon knew all of that but decided to go forward with it at the reunion to go after her.
Yeah, Shannon's a movie maker. Shannon is going to make that drama. And you know, I'm not a parent, but I'm sure it pissed her off. I'm sure you don't say those things to kids, probably. But oh, you also God. Probably don't have your kids at like a grown-up party where people are getting drunk if you don't want that stuff to happen. So,
yeah, I don't know. I feel like
I can't watch Bronwyn, to be honest with you. It's just like,
I know. It's that tough. Is like, she was the hardest one to watch last season, and I watched the entire season, and I'm like, I was interested in her story, but something wasn't authentic about it. Maybe she is an alcoholic. I believe she is. Maybe she's gay. I believe she's gay. But something felt produced, and
produced.
But she also connected with some of the women, and then later it didn't follow through, which made me feel like, was she just connecting with them on camera and then didn't have any real friendships with them? One example is Gina. Like, they really connected. And then it just, it's like, how did that fall apart? Because I don't think it was on Gina's side. She opened up to her. And then Elizabeth Vargas also opened up and then said afterwards she didn't hear from Bronwyn. It's like she said her deepest, darkest secret about being in this cult as a child and being molested, and then doesn't hear from Bronwyn after doing that. So something just didn't feel, something wasn't, Bronwyn didn't fit with this, not just this group, but if she can't make friends with this group of people and there's no real relationship, even just as coworkers, then it doesn't make sense to have her on.
100%. There are there are housewives in all these franchises that are monsters that we like to watch, right? So there's like two types of monsters. There are monsters that we like to watch, like Ramona, so on and so forth. Even like Kelly Dodd makes really good television. But Bronwyn just seems like a friend collector and a fame collector, and you can tell she's not there to be, I don't know. You know, I know that they're all there to make money and do a job and get fame so they can have businesses and be successful, and that's smart. But there is something when we can see through that that's gross.
Yeah. And I will say with Kelly Dodd, she was not interesting this past season. There was nothing happening in her life.
None of them are.
Yeah. Gina was interesting. She has the least aspirational life, but she was the most interesting to me to watch on TV.
She's funny. I like Gina. I agree. And I love, the reason I watched these shows or started watching them is because these women were like wealthier than I'll ever be. And I loved that. That's why I love Kathy Hilton. That's why I loved all, that's why I like that Luann was a countess. And, you know, we have seen a lot of these women kind of fall from grace, but we still watch them. That's why I like, you know, like Erica's story about like living in this, like, what was it?
$16,000 square foot mansion.
And like, that's, yeah, now going to this, like 2000. House that's like,
it was beautiful. Like, I thought so, the place beautiful. That she moved was amazing.
I agree. It's so beautiful, but it's just, you know, and I like a lot of Erica. Like, I like to watch her for the most part, but you know, I don't watch these shows to watch people who like live in houses that like my friend, like I'd like go to my friend's house.
Right. Which is what's hard about Gina is that she has this small house.
Casita. And I literally wrote in a note. I wrote in a note like Gina Casita vibes with Erica.
Right. Although I thought Erica's place was very
way better than the Casita.
Beautiful, but it's funny that it was 3-bedroom and 2 of the bedrooms are going to be used for storing her clothes.
I know.
Oh my goodness. So let's recap. Let's dive into the liberation of Erica Jane. My goodness. They definitely wanted to sell us a story. That's for sure.
You know, if I see one more to be continued, I'm going to lose it.
I think Ryan Bailey made like a change.org petition that Bravo never end and to be continued.
we know it's going to be like, that's why we're watching. We know that it's going to be continued.
It always continues.
It always continues. Like, we don't need to know that. It's so weird that they do that.
So they're back at Sutton's Parisian lunch and It's no one acknowledges what's going on with Erica. They're just waiting to see when she feels comfortable speaking. I think the only person wondering like what the hell is happening is Garcelle, which thank God we have Garcelle. And yeah. Kyle talks about arguing with Dorit, says it's sister-like, and then jokes. But they also talk about how Kathy talks in shorthand. Yeah. And she does. And Kyle does the funniest impression. I mean,
I know.
Kathy is making Kyle more likable to most of the viewers, I think.
Absolutely,
it is
yeah.
so funny to see them together. And then yeah. Kathy saying, you never know who's listening.
I know. She is, I swear to God, like she was given to us because of this pandemic. I feel like she was gifted to us, and we've all known who Kathy Hilton is, right? Like our whole lives, we've known who she is. We watched her in that documentary about Paris, but never did we know, or at least I didn't know how incredible she is. Like that was such a surprise that she's so funny.
It isn't. But the thing is I don't think it's terribly unique. I think there's a lot of really funny 60-year-old women. I actually think the older women get, the funnier they are, because the less they care about social standards and all this stuff, yeah. and they stop pretending. And most people at a certain age are like, what the hell, who am I trying to impress? And they it's just true. Say what
she's
they're
beautiful.
thinking. Oh, she's gorgeous.
She's so beautiful.
But she reminds me so much of like my mom's friends and just...
I was just going to say she reminds me of like my aunts and my mom. Like
very much.
Yeah.
Just how she's she great. Talks, how she interacts with the universe, how she's constantly shocked and bewildered by finding out things
yeah.
and getting excited. Oh, I just found out what a goat is.
Yeah, that is my mom after a glass of wine, after a Manhattan. Like, that is my mom.
And that's one of my favorite things about The Housewives, is allowing women of a certain age to live openly, out loud, and authentically.
Yes.
And Kathy does that for me. Is she bringing so much storyline? No. But I love seeing her take on the world. And I love someone coming in without what appears to be an agenda. It's like she doesn't need more money. She doesn't need more fame. She's just kind of doing it for shits and giggles.
Absolutely. And that's why I feel like, and I do like a lot of these women, don't get me wrong, but if we had like a Kathy Hilton, like casted Housewives franchise, I mean, it would be incredible. Something that I love about Beverly Hills is like the OJ tie-in.
Yes.
I like live off of that OJ Simpson with Kyle and Faye. And the other woman who knew him, I forget her name, that was on it like seasons ago.
The blonde one who's married to the baseball player.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And like, that's why I love like the
Catherine Edwards.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And with like Kris Jenner and the OJ thing, like I love that tie-in and I love when they talk about it. And I love that these women of a certain age and like generation went through this huge event in this city together, and they're still friends and they still talk about it. It's so interesting to me.
It is wild. I don't think I put it all together until that big like OJ show came out, the 6-part show where Sarah Paulson played Marsha Cross and all of that. And I realized that I missed the entire OJ thing. Like I was alive during it and I remember the verdict and I remember us watching it at school, but nothing like that I heard about it was the most accurate. Or I heard the perspective from my parents, which were very focused on the fact that a nice Jewish boy was murdered.
Yeah.
like Nicole Brown and this Jewish boy, you know, and his whole story with his family and all of that. And he was just kind of at the wrong place at the wrong time, like returning glasses or something. And I also, this is something I didn't realize until I was an adult. Jay Leno used to have dancing Judge Itos. So the judge, he had him on like sticks.
I kind of remember that.
He had these like dancing Judge Itos. Yeah. I didn't realize that the judge's name was Judge Ito. I thought it was Jujito. It's like, that's such a child thing to do. I was like,
also, why
Jujito,
were we,
like, that's his full name.
Why were we watching Jay Leno?
Because it was on
too.
At like
I know.
At whatever time, and I was Central Time, so like it was on way earlier. So I remember seeing Jay Leno more than I think any child should have been exposed. I have no idea why, and I don't think my parents particularly were fond of him or watched. It was just on sometimes.
Yeah, my mom gave me, like, when we had gotten like a new TV, my mom gave me the old one to put in my room when I was like in high school or maybe middle school or something, and it was the oldest TV where like you turned the dial
and you, like move the antenna and you get totally different channels.
So the only channels I got were like NBC and CBS, so I would just watch Jay Leno at night when I went to bed.
I was never allowed to have a TV in my room growing up.
I don't blame your parents.
It was just not allowed. And I, when I, like now I have one in my room just because I can. It's not
I don't even watch mine.
Watch it that much. I know. The fact that I can have it feels like still such a pleasure.
Yeah, I know. Same. I have one in my room and I'm like, and I turn it on maybe like once a month.
It's so funny, the things that we remember. You're right. The tie-in with Beverly Hills, there is a lot of history there and very fascinating. It really is so Hollywood adjacent. And now that we've got Crystal Minkoff and her husband, Rob, who is a big-time Hollywood director, like that's what I love. I love getting these big names. She's boring, though. You think she's boring?
Yeah. I mean, I agree with her. Like, every time she says something, I agree with her. And I feel like I would act the same way, but I don't know if like I would make a good housewife. So like, that's why, like, I'm not sure I need to watch her. I like her husband and I like that whole tie-in and why he's famous and stuff. And I think this is the only franchise where fame works.
Yes.
Pre-fame. But I don't know. So far, she's not giving me anything.
I just don't know that I have a strong opinion on her.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about that naked thing for like weeks now.
Well, what's interesting is in Brian Moylan's book, The Housewives, he talks about why that happens on Beverly Hills. And it's because the production company does not intervene. So it lets the stories play out naturally. And, you know, naturally people hold on to things and keep bringing them up and they obsess over them and all of that. Whereas the production company, True Media, I think, that does Atlanta and Potomac will actually intervene and be like, guys, move on.
Wrap it up.
Go, keep going. And so that's why things move so much quicker on Atlanta and Potomac, is because the producers actually like step in or like, ladies.
That makes sense. It seems like it's going like quickly now so far. It's been keeping my interest. I mean, I feel like we're like going through things pretty quickly.
Yeah, no, definitely. And we get to Erica finally. You know, she says, let's discuss the elephant in the room. And her big stuff was that Tom pushed her out of this marriage, that conversations, the things that used to be conversations, were reduced to sentences. She spent about 30 days trying to close out certain parts of her life. She tried to make it work, but she was met with resistance, and she didn't see it ending this way. And none of this makes sense based on what we know now, right? Like, what we know is that it sounds like this is the way her marriage had been for quite some time, right? If he cheated on her, that whole story about how she went to dinner with some of his friends and she was like, sorry, I was stuck in traffic. And the friend said, oh, a better man, you know, wouldn't have made you wait in traffic, or assuming like a plane or helicopter or something.
Right.
And then he's like, if you think you can afford her, you can have her. Like, she stayed with a man who said things like that. She stayed with him, and it wasn't until he lost his money that she left. So, I mean, that's the facts, right?
That's the facts. And I know it seems to me like, so, you know, obviously she went through it. I think everything she said is true in terms of like how she was treated and how he acted. He seemed,
for sure.
I mean, you're never going to meet an old rich white guy who's going to be like the pinnacle of like feminism, right? I mean, good luck. Yeah. But I believe all that. I don't think that that's why she divorced. I think that I don't know a ton about him and why and what's going on with him legally.
It's bad.
I don't, yeah. So, I mean, I do think that she probably, I don't know. I wouldn't doubt if they discussed her needing to get out to save herself.
And that's what's being alleged in some of the lawsuits, right? That they decided to get divorced. It's fake. It's not real. They're getting divorced because of trying to hide some of the assets. So what he did was basically he negotiated settlements for people that had horrible things happen to them. And he got the money in the settlements and then would keep that money instead of keeping it in like a separate account that was only for clients and then would disperse it to the clients. He put his hands in there. He took that money out and he would take out loans or other things and sometimes pay people, not always on time. It was never coming always directly from the money that was theirs. Yeah. And it's illegal to do that. You're not allowed to touch client money. It's not of your course. Money.
Yeah.
And so that's what he was doing. And then he gave $20 million in loans, and I don't understand the terms of the loans, to EJ Global, which was Erica's company. And so she received $20 million from accounts that were for Girardi Keith's accounts. It was not his personal checking account or his savings account. It was business accounts. So you could infer that since he had been doing all this really shady stuff with money, that $20 million was client money and that never got paid out to the clients.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, we've all been watching her for seasons, like how many, like 5 years? Mm-hmm. Ish, 4 years. Like, how are we going? Yeah, like she spends money like you wouldn't believe. I mean, those plane tickets alone for her glam squad.
I mean, it's like $40,000 a month on glam.
That's what I mean. So it's a month. So
you're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars. You're talking about like $500,000 a year almost in
just hair and makeup and wardrobe, not even like the clothes you buy.
Right.
So it's like, you know, I'm sure there are people that are that wealthy, but I don't know if I never thought that, like, obviously the show's not funding that. Her income from Housewives isn't funding that. She's not going on world tours constantly. I mean, and that's not funding that.
And those aren't making money. I don't think they're making a ton of money. I went to see her in concert. It wasn't entirely sold out. We bought tickets hours beforehand. Like, you know, we showed up. It just wasn't.
The gays can only fund her as, I know, as far as possible. I mean, it's like, so it's, yeah, she's not selling out like arenas. And
he made a lot of money being a lawyer, right? Because if you're settling these massive multi-million-dollar claims and you even get, 30-40% of that, that's still huge. But tons. That's probably not huge enough to have two private planes, to have your wife have constant glam for all of these things. He liked to show that he had a lot of money. And I just wonder if she knew where the money was coming from or if she was just not asking, but her name is signed to some of these loans. And so she knew that there was money being exchanged and money was being taken out and money was being promised. So she had to have known something was up, and it definitely wasn't just the 30 days before she filed for divorce. And so I think she looks pretty bad filing for divorce only once the money's up.
Yeah.
And don't tell me the story of how he didn't treat you right. Because that had been going on. That's not the reason you left.
Yeah, she's definitely using that as a crutch. I mean, she's harping on, you know, and I don't want to like impugn anything she's gone through or anything like that. But it is kind of shitty to use the hardship that people go through on a daily basis just to give yourself an easier time on the Housewives.
Exactly. And the hardship that people go through on a daily basis, that's exactly it. She was in a shitty marriage. Do you know how many people are in shitty marriages?
That can't file for divorce, that can't afford a divorce, that can't run away, that can't. Yeah, exactly.
You're not special because you were in a bad relationship or relationship that soured, right?
Yeah. Sorry you bought a like multi-million dollar home and escaped, like fleed in the middle of the day from your, you know, it's, she was able to do that. She has the money to do that. And she's like, they're like, what car did you get? And she kind of says a Range Rover, like, oh, I had a downgrade to a Range Rover. And it's like, listen, we get it. We want to hear the story, but we don't need you like complaining about your Range Rover.
It's just hard to hear it when the clients of Girardi Keese had these not so daily horrific things. Massive 90% of their body burned in an explosion, having to have over 30 surgeries and continue of skin grafts and constant things to make their body keep working. People who lost their parents, their spouses, their children in plane crashes. I mean, there's so many people who went through these astronomical tragedies. And what's hard for me is she doesn't show any sort of sympathy towards them, even if she had nothing to do with it, right? Even if she thought this money was all, you know, his and earned by him and, you know, all of that, you can still feel bad that these things happen to these people. And that's what's hard is when she does speak, it'd be one thing if she was completely silent to the media.
Yeah.
If she went silent in social media and everything, we wouldn't really know what she was thinking. But all we do hear is, oh, she's posting this picture of herself or this, you know, graphic of herself with the, you know, crucifix. She's being crucified. She's a scapegoat. She's orphans and widows and all of that. And it doesn't sound like she has any form of sympathy towards what happened and what her husband did.
Yeah. And she's talking about her beautiful home in Los Angeles. Like, doesn't she call it like a teeny tiny little home or something? And it's like,
it's 2,000 square feet and it's 3 bedrooms and 2 of them are closet for basically for her.
It's such a nice clothes. House.
You know, yeah, she's just, it's also hard. And we like watching these women have nice things. It's aspirational living. I do not care
that she has all that stuff at all. It's the fact that it's like, she's treating it like it's like nothing.
Yeah. And during an economic downturn that so many of us have been through, you know, with COVID and people losing their jobs and unemployment ending, and then to see her so frivolously, you know, with the money that was stolen money. That's the difference between her and Crystal. Crystal's bag that's $95,000 was paid that, for like, by her husband.
My mind.
Yeah.
I was saying 95,000 over in my head, like over and over and over. And I was like, did it say 9,500? Like, was it 9,500? And I like kept thinking, I like couldn't stop thinking about it for like 10 minutes after. I was like, $95,000.
Imagine how much money you must have in order to spend that amount of money on a bag. They have legit money. I mean, think about The Lion King. Everyone knows The Lion King. Everyone's watched The Lion King. Everyone had Lion King toys. People all over the world know The Lion King and Disney. It's not happens. Just American, you know?
Absolutely. Like, yeah, no, totally. Just from The Lion King alone, he's probably like a trillionaire.
So what I like about her husband is it seems like he's still very invested in his work and very like creative and wanting to keep making movies and making things.
But also runs to the door to get it.
I loved it when he was like, oh, I'm the Uber Eats. I'm the Postmates. Yeah. I'll run, you know, if you ran out of something.
Yeah, he's cute. He seems like
they seem very sweet together.
Yeah, they do. And I think that she probably, I don't like mind watching her at all. It's just that I don't know if she's gonna, I don't like Sutton, to be honest with you.
I think a lot of people don't like Sutton. I might be one of the only people, and I don't know if I like her as a person or if I just like her on the show because there's a lot happening and we're getting to see it and I feel entertained by her.
Yeah. I liked her last season.
I didn't right away. And now,
I don't know why.
I've said this like so many times, but I am perplexed by Sutton. I can't tell if she acts like a 12-year-old or an 80-year-old. Like, it's definitely nowhere in between. She's either very juvenile or very old. And like, she doesn't seem to be amongst peers. Even though she is, they're all her age.
Yeah, you know? It doesn't seem. Yeah, like it seems like even when Garcelle is with her, it's almost like Garcelle is like inviting her Nana over.
Yes, and it like, totally is.
And like humoring her. Like it seems like they're like, it's like she's humoring her. Like she's this cute woman who she's like just having over and she's like, come on, kids, be nice. Like Sutton's coming over. And it's weird. She's like, again, like she's not. It's not that I wouldn't like her in person. I just don't know if I like watching her.
Yeah. Her freaking out a few episodes ago about Crystal having the audacity to share her life experience as an Asian woman in the United States was mind-boggling. And the fact that she didn't seem to get what she was supposed to apologize for, it wasn't just freaking out at her. It was like, you shut down a woman of color while she was trying to share her experience. You know, I'm glad that
Sutton, I don't see color.
I know. But I'm glad that now she seems to have watched it back and they've had some sort of conversation, her and
You mean and the Crystal. Like her PR person told her what to say because she looked bad.
But she's but she still said it, and she she took accountability in a way that we haven't seen happen. We haven't seen it from Luann. We haven't seen it from Ramona.
I was just gonna say that.
So she said it. Sutton, Crystal accepted it, and I'm hoping that when we revisit it on the reunion, that she will have done the work to understand why it's problematic to say you don't see color. Because honestly, up until recently, I think a lot of people thought that that was the goal, right? That was the goal, to not see color.
Yeah. I have said this. I've said this on my podcast and stuff. And I always considered myself like a really liberal, obviously anti-racist person. And I didn't know so much stuff until like a year ago at this time. Like, I always knew that I was in support of Black Lives Matter. I guess I didn't really know why. I just knew that I supported it. And until the George Floyd stuff happened, I really didn't know what everything meant. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what Black Lives Matter meant. I knew that it was important and I knew that I agreed with them, but I didn't know exactly what it meant until you really like open your mind and listen to people. And you know, you hear people say all lives matter and you think it's gross. Or obviously, I didn't know how gross it was until a year ago. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the whole point. Like, you literally, all you have to do is listen for like 10 minutes and really absorb it. And it clicks. And that's what I think people have a hard time with.
Well, I think listening is a thing that in general we have a hard time with. Yeah. You know, when something doesn't fit our narrative, we don't want to listen to it. And a lot of us, you know, me as a daughter of an immigrant, have been taught that this is a wonderful country and this is the best country. And where I grew up was horrible and you couldn't do any of these things and you didn't have these freedoms. And look at what you have and you can do anything, right? This country lets you be anyone you want to be. And you grow up believing those things. A lot of us do. And then you're older and you realize that there's systemic problems and that, you know, it's not some things may be true. Yes, you can, you know, be anything you want to be, but it's really hard to get your foot in the door. And some people are kind of propped up and others are held back. And you just don't see it all, you know, as a white person, you know, even someone who's a religious minority, an ethnic minority, all of that, daughter of an immigrant, like, I didn't see a lot of it. But the thing is it's so important to listen and to have diverse friends. And I think that's what we're missing in this country, is people are getting like more and more in their echo chambers and only hang out with people who are in the same socioeconomic status as them, or the same religious group as them, the same race as them, same neighborhood, all of that. And then you kind of, it's like this echo chamber and people don't hear each other. And then they're shocked when something pierces it, their bubble.
Yes. You have to talk about it. I happen to like work in a environment that's super diverse, and I always felt like you couldn't ask questions and you couldn't talk about things like that. But the second you do is like the moment it all opens up, and people really appreciate it. I mean, you're never going to learn if you don't ask and you don't listen. So,
and I think,
listen up, Ramona.
One of the things that happened, and you said a year ago, you know, with George Floyd and all that, it opened up a lot of conversation and it opened up opportunities for people to ask questions that they felt stupid asking, that they felt embarrassed asking. Like, I should know this. I've lived in this country as long as you, but I don't have the same experience as you.
Yes.
Like, I'm here now. I'm listening. So.
Exactly. I know. Yeah. That's why so I said that I loved when these women, so I love that they're like filming at the same time. I love that we're getting like an election night show, an election night show. I love that they're being like, they're having a racial conversation and a racial conversation. I like love that this is all happening at the same time. It's happening so much better, though, I feel like. On the Beverly racial Hills. Stuff, well, the
and,
yeah.
And the political stuff on Beverly Hills is way better. Yeah.
It's way better. But I do, like, love, I love Ebony.
Yeah. I mean, she's...
I do like her a lot.
Beautiful and smart. And
oh, my God. You don't... The way that she...
she's so smart.
The way that she, like, remains calm in these situations is mind-boggling to me. It's amazing.
I mean, she should be a politician. Like, she would be so good at not letting people get to her, hammering out political deals. But I mean, she's a communicator. That's like what she's been trained in, the law and communicating. She's great. But what I've been so confused by and frustrated by is, so she's 37. She's very young. I don't normally like young housewives. She is? Yes. She's very young.
I know.
She looks young, but her aura.
I'm 35.
I'm 37. I'm the same age as Ebony, and she's just done so much with her life, you know?
Yeah, great.
And then, so when you see someone do so much with their life and are so professionally accomplished, you're like, okay, they're at least 40, you know, in my mind. Like, if they've done all those things. And then you've got Leah, who's 38, and she's being treated by everyone else like a child. They're, like, infantilizing her. Well, when you
act like one.
Right? But Ebony's going through many similar situations as Leah. Her grandmother is also dying, right? She's trying to navigate a lot of things. She's new on this show. She's having to deal with these white women who are really obnoxious and not listening and don't understand. And then it's just crazy because they're basically the same age, and yet one of them is being treated like a child and the other is being treated like a full adult. And
like a teacher. Yeah, that is crazy that you mentioned that, because Leah like is giving me, like, remember when Bethany came back from
season
her, like,
seven, was it?
Yeah, and she cried at, like, literally everything.
Yeah, she was very... That, off.
She was like hyper emotional, but I felt like that was more interesting, and like Leah crying and everything and flipping out is like driving me crazy.
I can't with Leah. I'm looking forward to
the show,
her storyline continuing about becoming a Jew, because that will be great.
What
for
a weird
our people.
Like, I don't like young housewives either. I like to watch these, like, older, established, funny women.
Karen Huger.
Yeah.
You know? Like a Karen Huger is perfect.
Like, I love, yeah, like, I, that's why I like Dorinda. She's, like, this old, tough New York woman. And I love New York because they wake up after a night of drinking and partying and they do not give a shit. They will walk out of those rooms in sweatsuits with their hair completely messed up. They have no makeup on. They're so hungover.
They'll shit and, on like, the floor.
They'll shit on the floor. You know that those women are real. Like, that's what I love about those women. But they don't, whereas like in Beverly Hills, they like walk out of the room in like silk nighties and like beautiful blown out hair and makeup all over the place. And that's what I love about New York. I don't want to like look at Leah should be on Summer House or something. Leah should be on Summer House or like Vanderpump Rules, like Manhattan style or something. It shouldn't be the housewives.
I feel like she should be on Southern Charm. She should be go with the people.
Yeah, we're missing like a Manhattan version. So we've got like Vanderpump Rules and Summer Charm, and I feel like we're missing like a Manhattan. I know we have Summer House, but that usually just takes place in the Hamptons. I feel like we need a Manhattan young person show.
Yeah, I feel like Summer House used to be that, but because last season was only COVID. In the Hamptons, you didn't get to see them going into work or what they were doing, because the first few seasons you did get to see them in the city.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll go back to that.
I hope so. I liked seeing them like in their day-to-day.
Me too. That's I love Summer House, but one of my favorite reasons why I like it is they have real jobs. It's not just being a reality star, and there's something to that that makes good television when your only job isn't to be on television. you know?
And that's what that's where Bravo made the mistake with Vanderpump Rules. They like got too famous.
Yeah, but it worked for like 7 seasons. It was just season 8.
For a long time. Yeah,
so it was really brilliant. And we'll see. Who knows? It could work again. I'm not counting them out.
No, I know. I'm not like...
I will watch anything. I have very low standards. I watched the last season of The OC. So if I can make it through that, I can make it through just about anything.
Absolutely.
I will not give up on Vanderpump Rules.
No.
Okay. No. Wanted to get your thoughts on the Crystal and Sutton situation. So Crystal tells Dorit that she felt violated by Sutton walking in on her naked. She seems to give a lot more detail about it to Dorit than what we heard when she first told the story. And she seems more upset about it than I think I even realized.
Yeah, I think like in the moment, if that happened to me in the moment, I probably would have put pants on and walked out of the door and like been like, listen, like you can't just walk into my room. So I'm judging this based on how I would react, I guess. I think Crystal's probably maybe by the hand of a producer, who knows, maybe pushing it along a little bit.
Yeah, it could have really bothered her, but
sure. Absolutely.
And the cameras coming in, it could have been like there could have been so more to it that thing. We didn't see. Like, did the camera crews try and come in? Was that what triggered her? Was it she's just in a vulnerable place? Was she really honestly more upset about the conversation with Sutton, where Sutton was like, we're not talking about racial stereotypes, you know, like that?
Yeah,
whole thing.
And we've also learned that she's really insecure about her body.
Yes.
So
you're totally right.
That's another thing that I'm sure touched on that. Yeah, like, I mean, I don't know if, like, the thing is, violated is a tough word.
Right. Violated is a tough word. Crazy is a tough word. Manic is a tough word, you know, and I don't think I knew that when she used those words with Sutton, it felt wrong, but I didn't make the connection. Sutton had just told her earlier that trip that her father killed himself.
Yeah.
And she made it sound, based on how she talked this time, that he may have suffered from bipolar disorder and, you know, may have been manic at the time when he did it. So that word manic really can hold a lot more weight for her.
For sure. Yeah.
At the same time, there was a lot of things that Sutton said that she should not have that were extremely triggering about don't talk about racial stereotypes and completely shutting her down. So they both have said things that I think offend
they should
the
probably
other.
Are you on CoStar?
No, what's that?
Like the astrology app?
No.
So you can, like, if you download CoStar, like, we're not, this is, this CoStar down. Is not sponsoring this podcast, but if you download CoStar, you can like fill in your like birth time and birthday and stuff like that, and it tells you, it reads you your chart basically, but you can connect with people on it. And it will tell you, like, how you're compatible and how you're not compatible. And, like, I just think with those two, there's some sort of communication that doesn't work. Like, have you ever met someone where, like, the communication just every word out of your mouth is taken the wrong way?
Yeah.
And you just, yeah. And in real life, you wouldn't be friends with those people.
It's like if you work with someone and they just don't understand what you're saying. Oof. You know, yeah. And you, but you're forced in a situation together because you both work together. I don't really have that right now, but, you know, I have in the past, and it's, you're right, certain people, and that's what I've felt from the beginning with them, is that they just do not mesh, and it is a fascinating, almost like social experiment to watch two people who
it's
clash,
awkward, right?
Who, like, can't communicate, like let's set aside the conversation about race and everything that Sutton had did wrong with that, and let's set aside the things that Crystal had said about being manic and crazy. Like, the two of them, setting those things aside, still cannot communicate basic things. Like, and it's no one's fault, it's just two personalities that just don't
do you know
mesh.
How old Crystal is?
She's young too. I think she's also 37.
Oh my god. I need to get going or something.
I know. Where's my $95,000 bag and 50-year-old husband?
Honestly, I'll take like
the store for me.
Seriously, I'll take anything, like a fraction of that. But yeah, it just seems like they just can't communicate. And sometimes that doesn't make for good television. Like, it's one thing when they're fighting. If you're fighting, it's interesting and whatever. But it doesn't seem like either of them. I can, like, get Crystal sometimes, like, on that boat when they were trying to apologize to each other. And she's just kind of, like, staring at her and, like, not processing what she's saying. Like, I've been there. I've kind of, like, not accepted apology or, like, seen or just been annoyed by someone and just kind of stared at them while they're trying to talk. And it's, I get that, but I'm not sure we need to see it on TV.
Yeah, you know? I find it fascinating to watch, honestly. I'm like, I get, these two people are, it feels like a social experiment, and I'm totally down for it.
From an anthropological point of view.
Which is kind of how I watch The Housewives. Like, yeah, I use it to laugh and to be entertained, but it is so fascinating to watch people experience life and not know how to react and be put in these new situations. And
that's why I like the first, like those first couple of seasons are like the best, like the Salt Lake City first season. And I was I'm always nervous about a new season because Housewives isn't new, right? Like the idea of Housewives isn't new, but so I'm always nervous, like, well, we're going to get a new season, sure, but they're still on social media. They're still watching these Housewives. Is it really going to get that same feel? But like Salt Lake City brought that same feel. And I got like an OC vibe from them, like an OC or like something. I got like an energy from them that I didn't get in a while. Did you not?
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I really liked Salt Lake and I felt... But they were, what was different about them is they came in knowing they were housewives.
Yeah. There's
A lot of the first season housewives, it wasn't housewives. Like Dallas didn't know they were going to be housewives. Potomac, they didn't know they were going to be housewives. So the first seasons of those ones are a little off because you're like, why are they keep talking about charity? What the hell's wrong with them? And it was because like, that was the premise of the show. But with what I liked with the housewives was we did get some authenticity, but then we also had Jen Shah trying to play what she thought a housewife should be. And we also had Lisa Barlow try to do that. And then think, okay, who's going to be the most liked and who should I align myself with? Because absolutely. I know what the viewers are going to want, and then miscalculating. Right.
So that's why like my, and I don't know if this is like not a popular opinion, but like my favorite housewife was like Meredith.
Oh, I liked Meredith. I liked them all.
She just does seems to not give a can we swear? Okay. She just does not seem to give a fuck. Like she does not, she's like there. It seems like she's there just to be there and to make money for her business. And aside from that, she does not care. Her son, on the other hand, I have problems with.
I feel like people gave him a really hard time. I did get annoyed with him too, but he's pretty young. He didn't do anything drastically terrible. I feel like the hate on him.
I don't think he did anything wrong. He's like that type of person that I feel like in real life I would be like, get the fuck away from me.
Yeah. But I mean, I feel that way about most of these people I watch on TV. So I'm not going to give him a harder time.
You're right.
With Meredith, my only thing is she was not very upfront she was not engaged and she was not very upfront about what was going on in her marriage. Like, just come forward and say it. Not to say it to the other women, but to tell us.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
You know, just say what was going on. Like, we have separated this many times. We each saw different people, or I saw different people when we were separated. These are the issues that we're having. Like, you know, we got to see when he was like, are you going to move to Ohio? And she was like, no. To see that a bit, you know?
Yeah. And I love like a closet smoker housewife.
Oh, like a Luann.
Even though she's like kind of open about it now, but I love that. I don't smoke, like, obviously, like, I don't, like, pursue people who smoke, but, like, I like that. I like when they smoke and they think that they need to hide it.
Oh, it's so funny. New York, they do that a lot.
They do it all the time in New York, except, like, Dorinda kind of started to not care.
She always had, like, a jewel. I was like, are you 14?
And then I love, like, it was, like, one of the last few episodes of New York, Luann was like, I just needed to go have a cigarette. Like, I just love that energy from a housewife. And that's like, New York is so real. Like, they're fake as fuck, but like, I love they're real when they're on camera.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I know. I mean, obviously I don't know these women, but
No, I think they're pretty authentic to who they are. I definitely don't think they're pretending. With Beverly Hills, I think they're the most, like, they think the most about how they're going to be viewed.
Oh, yeah.
But they also get it wrong all the time. Like, they just can't seem to anticipate how the viewers will perceive them. And I think part of it is we're tired of you guys thinking about how we're going to view you. Just be. Just be. And then
we will like you.
We will like you or not like you, but just be yourself and be authentic and all of that. I think part of what's so great about Kathy and Kyle together is we get to see them just be. They're not trying to produce anything. She's not trying to move a story along. We get to just see her in her most natural self being with her sister.
Yeah. And I actually think, like, Dorit is being herself.
I've always thought Dorit was being herself.
Yeah.
She hasn't changed at all.
No. And she, I mean, her persona might be showy and fake, but I think that that's her authentic self. And what
I thought was interesting this episode, was it this episode or last week, where it basically came out that, yes, she was frustrated with Kyle, but she wanted to solve it, like, in between filming. And Kyle wanted to hold it until the election night party. And she was like, she wasn't returning my text. She wouldn't talk to me about it. She wanted to wait. And that's Kyle producing, saying, okay, yes, we're not going to, you know, I don't know if it's Kyle thinking the viewers deserve to see it or what, but she wanted it to be on camera.
We didn't even see the fight.
Yeah, but it was caught on camera. We just didn't get.
Yeah.
They had, like, to bring the footage, like, back.
So that's what I mean. Like, I feel like we wouldn't have even heard about that if Kyle didn't bring it up on camera later. But Kyle was really pissed off about it and wanted us all to know that she was pissed off.
The whole thing was just silly. I don't know. I'm really interested to see how they get COVID and what happens with that, because it is Kyle, Kathy, and Dorit that get sick. And they got sick at a time when, like, there was a huge uptick in cases in L.A. I mean, like, everyone
got
it.
You cannot keep a Los Angeles resident from partying.
I know. I don't even think they partied that much. Like, I know people that barely saw that many other people and during November, December. Like, it was, everyone had it.
Yeah, you're right. Someone who's really close to me, who was, like, the most conscious COVID person that I know, got COVID. But yeah, anyone that I follow that lives in Los Angeles, I feel like they just never stopped.
It wasn't the same
out
as the Northeast lockdown, yeah, where we truly didn't see other people.
It's like, true. I literally was stuck in a house for months by myself.
No, I was the same way. I, like, you know, and then when I did see people, it would be, like, at the dog park. Fully, like, masked,
like, gloved,
at least 15 feet from somebody else.
Yeah, for a while. Yeah, I mean, last summer we kind of eased up, but then it got crazy again.
Yeah, it was really rough. We get to see Rena and Erica go out to a hotel restaurant. I was like, where are you guys going during? I haven't been to a restaurant in so long.
I started.
But, like, I'm thinking, okay, this is must be back November then, 8th at this point, 9th, 10th. You know, I'm like, I can't believe these people were dining.
No, the first time I went to a restaurant, like, and sat down inside the restaurant was the Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah.
So I just didn't want to go during COVID. I just didn't think it was that, like, there was, like, plexiglass everywhere, like, mask people. It just wasn't pleasant for me.
Yeah.
But anyway, I know. So these
women, they weren't serving hot toddies. Like,
they sure weren't serving hot toddies where I went. But if you notice it too, like, everyone has a mask on, but they don't. And they're, like, quickly ushered to these seats where they're, like, because you know that the restrictions were so strict, but they were like, well, we got to keep these women without masks on. Like, and how about at the doctors? Like, who in America got to go to the doctor without a mask on?
When Sutton goes to get a mammogram. You know, I mean, what did she think was going to happen? You say you've never had a mammogram in front of Kyle.
Down.
Come on.
Oh, no. You're right.
In front
right
of Kyle,
that.
Kyle takes everyone to go get a mammogram. Her mom died of breast cancer. Of course she's going to take
Didn't
people.
Didn't she go with Rinna?
Yes, she's gone with Rinna. Yeah. She brought Lisa Vanderpump at one point. Kim. Now we've got Sutton. I mean, she'll take anyone for a mammogram. I hope that when I mammogram age, I can go for a mammogram with Kyle Richards. I will gladly do that.
I'm sure by that point, she will definitely be on this podcast and you will be mammogramming.
Can we get a mammogram together?
Yeah, she will. And she'll do it. Just tell her you've never had one.
And I mean, I'm gonna show up at BravoCon and tell Kyle.
Are you going?
No, I have a wedding that weekend. I really want to go.
Oh, come on. I'm sure you can. Is the whole weekend?
Yeah, and it's in California.
Oh, so no one is even going to be in California when you're there.
Right.
They're all going to be.
Yeah, it's just going to be me and a couple friends in Sonoma, and that's it.
Yeah. Seriously, there should be like a Northern California housewife, but
I feel like we've had enough of the California housewife.
I know you're right. I don't need to. Honestly, I don't. I know. I don't need a new franchise right now.
Although Salt Lake was incredible. And I feel like if we're going to get another new franchise, it's got to be amongst a niche, unusual community that I cannot anticipate.
It's got to be somewhere where we don't know anything about.
Right.
And that, although I would love DC back.
Well, they're never going to get DC because people in DC, the real people that you would want to see on Housewives, and they do exist, would never, ever open their home to the cameras. They're too smart and they're too polished, and they don't let people know their dirt. And they don't
they're
need
like
to be
too
famous.
Fancy. Yeah, exactly. They're like too fancy. There's something about DC that's so... it's like super high-end living. It's way more so than like even New York sometimes. It's like this quiet wealth.
That's what it is. It is quiet wealth because it's not like people have to tell you how much money they have or how much power they have. And that doesn't always go together. Like, yeah, people have money, but the power and the influence.
Yeah. Like, do you live in Georgetown?
No. I did Georgetown. For 1 year and was like, this shit is way too far from the metro.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm heading. So I live on U Street.
Okay.
So it's like a party.
I usually go there like every summer, but obviously not last summer.
Let me know if you're coming this summer because I live in a happening place.
I love DC so much.
I'm not happening anymore. When I moved into this place, I would like go out all the time. Now I'm like,
oh yeah, I don't do anything.
Asleep on the weekend, and you can like hear people partying until 4 a.m. just like screaming. Yeah. I was like, my neighborhood, like it was hard to sleep during COVID because I was like, where are all the car alarms? Like, who are all these drunk people? Like, no one's screaming and vomiting on the sidewalk.
I know. I feel like I'm too old. Like, the thing I loved about DC was like the young professional people that would just like go out all the time. But now I'm like 35 and they're too young for me to hang out with.
Right. But it still is fun. It's really fun to meet people that are passionate about what they do for a living. And that's so much what DC is. I don't think it's as much about people judging each other for what they do for a living, which is how I think people from the outside view it when we're like, so what do you do? Because that's everyone's first question in DC.
Yeah.
It's genuinely because they want to find out more about you. And a lot of people identify so much with their careers because they moved here to do something different that they couldn't do elsewhere.
Right.
So that's how I view it. Like, I was just at a happy hour earlier for my building and we have a new neighbor and he's like, what do you do? I'm like, oh, I'm a lobbyist. But like for global health. And he's like, I'm a lobbyist too for like the National Park Service.
That's so like, fun though. I know.
Awesome. That's so great.
Look at that. You're meeting people.
I know. It's so fun. Now I just need to find out if any of these people watch Housewives. Yeah. It's always so fun when you meet people who like are into it.
I know.
It's usually I can figure it out pretty quickly if people know based on my dog's name.
Oh yeah, it's Stassi, isn't
Stassi.
It? Yeah.
But there is a guy in the building whose boyfriend has a dog named Ramona, named after Ramona Singer. It's a French bulldog. And so when Ramona first met Stassi, we were all like, what is gonna happen?
Stassi's like a Ramona in training, like in
exactly
real life. So
no,
that's
exactly
amazing.
So, you know, they sniffed each other's butts, and then Ramona wanted nothing to do with her.
Of course she didn't. Of course she didn't.
Perfect. It was absolutely perfect. Stassi's not polished enough. Oh, my goodness. What else happened in this? I feel like not a whole lot happened. It was just Erica trying to sell us on this. Oh, I should have shut up and been grateful because he provided for me, but he really wasn't nice, and so I left. But you just wait. There's more coming. They're coming after him.
I know. Like, what do you think? I know, like, she keeps saying, like, and they'll come after me and they'll come after me. Like, do you think she's actually going to be, like, hunted down by these people and, like.
Yes. Yes. I do. I think Jay Edelstein, attorney at law, is coming for her big time.
Oh, my God.
He says he can prove that she knew and that it's all client money. And that even if she's not in trouble criminally, which he doesn't believe she will be or is, that she will be in trouble with civil suits.
You know, we've seen it happen before. So, I mean, she wouldn't be the first housewife to go to jail for financial.
But no, but not criminal. That he doesn't say she broke any laws. It's not a criminal. Oh. It's civil suit. So it's going to be money. So he doesn't think anything's going to happen with her legally in terms of jail. Or fines or something like that. He thinks that they're going to find that she owes money and that she's going to have to pay it back.
She will do her best to be a housewife for the rest of her life. How much
she has to, she has to pay that back.
How much do you think she gets an episode?
I don't know. So she's been, is this her fifth or sixth season?
I can't remember.
We need to consult with Brian Moylan because he knows the salary bands, like what a first season housewife makes, what a second season housewife makes. And then at some point, I mean, I bet she makes a couple hundred thousand.
Do you? Okay.
For the season, yes. I believe. Okay. I would guess maybe 300,000.
Oh, wow. That's high. She could blow through that in like a month.
I know. Just one of her cars.
That's what I mean. Like, I used to be friends with a guy who was like a trust fund kid, and he would get like $10,000 a month, and he would like blow through it in like 2 weeks.
It's wild, but people, you know, get used to a certain amount of money, and then that's what they live off of. Yeah. And you just get used to it. And then when it's taken away, I think they don't really know what to do. So she always claims she came from humble beginnings and worked her way up. But for most of the, I mean, for the last 22 years, she's been completely taken care of. So
imagine being on a payment plan for like 20 mil. College debts don't look too bad now.
I wonder how much of her clothes, because she was starting to sell clothes at one point in December. Yeah. And the court stopped it. They won't let her.
Oh my God. She could probably sell her wardrobe on Letgo for
right? Poshmarket. I don't know. We'll see. I wonder if that house will ever sell.
Do you think he'll have to sell that? Yeah. I mean,
so it's on the market and he has to leave if it gets sold. But I just, someone on the internet posted pictures of the house next to Cheesecake Factory, like internal Cheesecake Factory pictures. And it's really hard to tell the difference. It's like, is this Erica Jane's dining
room? That is hysterical. That is exactly what it is. And that's what every housewife in like the mid 2000s wanted their house to look like.
A Cheesecake Factory.
They literally were like, Cheesecake Factory in my dining room and my living room. That's like what the Judice house looks like.
Yes.
That like brown marble and huge chunky seats.
And massive menu.
Huge menu.
Can't get through it.
Thick. 2 inches thick with like a 9,000 calorie salad.
That, you know what? You're so right about those salads at the Cheesecake Factory. You're like, your salads are so good, but they're like
delicious. Literally, I almost ordered one the other day, and it was like 1,900 calories for a Caesar salad. I'm not even exaggerating.
How is that possible? I know it's the dressing, but still.
But I know, but I kept thinking, I've been trying to eat like a certain amount of calories a day, and I'm like, I'll just get a salad. And I'm like, I can't even get a salad. Like, you're essentially just eating the dressing, right? Like, lettuce has like no calories. So you're essentially just eating dressing, and it's 1,900 calories.
That's insane.
I had to go to Panera and get a stupid, disgusting salad.
Oh, yeah. Panera's. That's gross. I know. I always like the soups at Panera, but then you check out how many calories they are and how much sodium, and you're like, well, I don't know.
Oh, yeah. You're salted up for the rest of the day.
Like, so thirsty.
And they give you a Dasani, which has, like, salt in it.
Oh, my goodness. Well,
I'm rambling.
Any kind of final thoughts on, you know, Beverly Hills, Erica, any of it?
I'm pleasantly surprised with this season. I have to admit, I went into both New York and Beverly Hills, like, kind of like, I'm probably not going to watch these. This is probably it for me. But I'm watching them, and I like them, and they're interesting. And it's mostly because of Kathy. And I think the producers knew they couldn't insert COVID too often, and we would stop watching, which is like why I stopped watching Below Deck, the sailing yacht. They just was like too much COVID talk, and then I'm thinking like this is like high COVID. They're like filming during like peak COVID, and there's like, so then it's like I don't want them to talk about it, but then I also am like, wait a minute, you're just ignoring it.
Right. There's no right way to do it.
There is.
If you definitely want to ignore COVID, watch Family Karma, because they never acknowledge it.
Well, that's in Florida.
They just don't acknowledge, but they don't even like start like, so since the last time I've seen you, yeah, there's been a global pandemic. It's just back to the story, you know?
Yeah.
They'll say, oh, this year we're doing something outside instead of inside. It's really good. I just binged it all last week.
You can watch it all?
Watch it all. So there's only one season, and then they just started the second season. Oh, yeah.
So I watched the first season.
Oh, okay. Yeah. The second season's very good. It's very funny. It doesn't feel like COVID. People still live with their parents.
Yeah, that's what I like about it. They are real. Those people seem authentic, and that's what I like. And they're not really getting a ton of fame, which is keeping it at that level that I like.
Actually, when I first heard about the building collapse in Florida today, I was like, oh my God, I hope it wasn't that building that Amrit moved into, him and I can't remember his boyfriend's name, but they moved in together to a place like overlooking the ocean.
Are they in Tampa?
No, they're all in Miami area.
Miami, okay, yeah.
And Miami Beach and kind of the surrounding neighborhoods, but I don't really know the exact neighborhoods. I need to ask someone who follows it more closely. Just like with Potomac, because I live here, I know what neighborhoods people live in and like different stuff and what area and that whole thing and what the neighborhood's known for and how some of the housewives
here
live closer to Baltimore, you know, and like Wendy's like more of a Baltimore type person and all of that. But when they go places in DC, it's just funny because they'll find a place like Monday through Wednesday in the downtown area, and people don't really do a whole lot because it's a business district. And so when it's the evening, no one's there because it's just like people are there for like working lunch, not for dinner as much and stuff like that.
The lunches always are weird. Yeah. Or like when the New York housewives went to Newport last season, which is like super close to me. That was super weird. I like where they were eating. I eat it all the time. And like, if anyone acted like that when I was like, I've never seen people act like that at those restaurants. It's like wild.
My neighbors just messaged this like text chain that we have said, need a new Wi-Fi name, help. I'm trying to figure out what I should say. Usually in DC, people have really funny ones.
I've never lived like in a building, so I've never got to like see how funny other people's like Wi-Fi names are.
Oh, they're pretty clever.
I live in like a house. Yeah, I live in like a multi-level house.
I'm gonna write Hillary's server.
Yeah, Hillary's emails.
Oh, there's always some funny ones. All right. Well, thank you so much, Zach, for joining and for shooting the shit with me.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is so fun. Tell everyone where they can find you and where they can listen to Mommy Dearest and how often you put out podcasts.
We put out a podcast every Monday. We call it Mummy Monday. You can find us on any podcast platform. It's the Mummy Dearest Podcast. And you can find me at Zach Mellon on Instagram.
Thank you so much. And let me know if you ever come to DC. And
I absolutely will. We will have to have you on the show.
Get together. Yes. There's so many 90s movies. Have you guys Can't Hardly Wait?
No, but it's okay. So I'll send you our list. We have a list of 37 movies that will last us through after Christmas. And I think that's on there for our back to school time.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love Can't Hardly Wait because they have the song Mandy in it. In Barry Manilow.
Yeah. So, I love that movie. And I love that song because of that movie.
Oh, me too. My parents sort of named me after the song. That's where they came up with the name Mandy. Cute. Yeah.
Oh.
So.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for being on, and we will chat soon.
Okay.